Okay, as it says, this talk is about a non-trivial constant, C equal to, I write down so many decimal places for a reason, which I'll explain to you in a minute, a little bit later. And so, but this is basically how this non-trivial constant appears in the first passage properties of just ordinary random walks in one and three dimensions. But they appear in two different physical quantities, which I'll explain. And then the talk is about how to calculate this constant. So this is a joint work done in collaboration with Alain Compte at OSSE and EHP and Bob Ziff at Michigan. Okay, so here's the rough outline of my talk. So I'm going to talk about two different problems. In the first problem, I'm interested in the expected maximum of a discrete time random walk in 1D. It's a discrete time but continuous space. And I'll explain to you how a non-trivial constant appears there. And the second problem, which is actually in three dimension, and there we're interested in some diffusing particles, again in discrete time, and we want to calculate the expected flux to a spherical trap. And it turns out that again, another constant C prime, I write it deliberately as different from this one. So both these constants were known numerically before, and it's just a, you know, sheer accident that up to five decimal places they were equal. And then the question was that, are they really equal? And can you calculate these constants? And what I want to tell you is that, yes, they are indeed equal, and you can actually calculate them. And there's an exact formula for this constant. And so I'll explain these two problems to you, and then I'll finally summarize the conclusion. Okay, so before I start about this constant, let me just, you know, recapitulate a little bit about ordinary, just one-dimensional Brownian motion. This is very trivial and just Brownian motion. So imagine that you have a continuous time Brownian motion in one dimension. So here I plot the position x tau of the Brownian particle, which is moving according to this equation of motion, where eta of tau is just a white noise with zero mean and delta correlator. And the particle starts at the origin. Okay, and this is the time tau, and so it does random walk basically, and it's just a Brownian motion, continuous time. And so you look at up to time t, and you look at its maximum within the time t. In other words, you know, if you're thinking of, you know, if you plot the space dimension this way, this particle is just jiggles around, it moves around in one-dimensional space. You look at up to time t, and then you ask, what is the maximum displacement on the positive x-axis? Okay, so that's the definition of m of t, which is just the maximum position of the particle up to time t onto the positive x-axis, starting from the origin. So obviously this is going to be a random variable, because each time if you plot another derivation of x of tau, this is going to have another value. So the question is, what is its distribution, or, you know, more simply, what is its mean value, expected value of this random variable. Okay. So in particular, we will be interested in the cumulative distribution. What's the probability that the maximum is less than z? Okay. So as Zoltan said, you know, usually when, if the random variables at different times points here, if they were completely independent random variables, then it's, you know, you can calculate this distribution. This is one of the three university classes, like Fisher, Tippett, Campbell, and Frechette and Weibull. But here, unfortunately, the random walk is correlated, because, you know, different point x of tau and x of tau prime, there is a correlation between them, so strong correlations. So you cannot apply those independent variable distributions. So here you have to solve this problem differently. Okay. And we want to know what is the expected maximum. So this is a very easy problem. It has been studied by many people. So how does one solve that? Well, so So basically you want to know the cumulative distribution. What's the probability that the maximum is less than some given level z up to time t? So this is exactly equivalent to the probability that the particle starting at z does not cross the origin up to time t. So it's just a first passage problem. And to see this, how do you see this? Because you just turn it around. So let me just show it in this picture. So here is your random walk. Okay, so you want to know what's the probability that up to time t, it did not cross this level z. Okay, so since you have this, you know, z going to minus z symmetry and translational invariance, you just turn it around. Okay, I can never get it right. How does it work? maybe this is the way. So now you can see that, you know, you can sort of say that this starts at z basically, and what's the probability that it did not cross this level? So it's just a first passage problem. So q of zt, you can interpret this as the probability that the particle starting at z did not cross the origin up to time t. Okay? So this is just the survival probability. And this is a very easy problem to solve. I mean, it's there in our chairman's famous book on Guide to First Passage Processes. So essentially, you write down a backward Fokker-Planck equation for this q of zt. So it's just a diffusion equation. And it's valid for all z positive. And there are the boundary conditions. That if you start at the origin, then of course you immediately cross the origin. So the probability that you survive up to time t is zero. But if you start at, you know, very far away from the origin, then the probability that it will survive for any finite time t is 1. So you have to solve this equation with these two boundary conditions. And the initial condition is that at t equal to 0, the probability that it, you know, if it starts at z, what's the probability it survives in time, very small time, is obviously 1. So therefore the initial condition of this equation is just 1. So you have to solve this equation. And this is pretty simple solution actually. It's just the error function, which is defined as, you know, just the cumulative Gaussian distribution. So it goes to 1 as x goes to infinity and goes to 0 as x goes to 0. So this is the distribution of the maximum. And in particular, if you are interested in the expected value of this, so you just have to take the derivative to get the probability density multiplied by z and integral over z, which you can write down as in this form, just by integration by parts, and you get square root of 4 dt by pi. So this is a classical result. And you would expect that the square root of t growth, because, you know, typically this particle, you know, typical position will go like square root of t, so you would expect that the maximum will also behave like, will scale like square root of t, but, you know, you get the precise coefficient here, okay, which is 4 d by pi. Okay, so far so good.
Excuse me, there's sure. Also a probabilist would use the reflection principle. There's a standard technique for doing that.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is, I mean, I'm saying this is a very well-known result. I'm not saying that this is my result or anything.
No, but I'm saying just a completely different technique,
yeah,
known as the reflection principle.
Yeah.
Is the way a probabilist would attack.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for the comment. Yeah, sure. All right, so now we come to the discrete time random walk problem. So again, you have this same random walker which starts at the origin. But instead of continuous time Brownian motion, now the time is discrete, like 1, 2, 3, etc. And at every time step, this particle jumps by a jump length, psi of m, which are taken to be independent and identically distributed IID random variables, drawn from some density f of y. Okay, so f of y is given to you, and so the particle is just jumping. Okay, so going from one step to another step like this. And we assume that this f of x is a sort of continuous and symmetric with a finite sigma square, finite width of this jump distribution, sigma square. So the typical position of the particle after n steps, x n square, will be sigma square times n. That's pretty simple to compute from this. Okay, so that's easy. However, we are interested here in the maximum of this random walker. So I look at up to n steps, and I ask, what is the maximum mn, which is the max of all this. So maximum displacement of the particle in the positive x direction. So again, like in the continuous time Brownian motion, this is a random variable. And we want to know what is its expectation value. Okay. So why this problem? Because this problem actually, our motivation actually came from this paper by applied computer scientists, Kaufman, Flageolet, Flatow and Hoffrey. So their motivation was that basically they came to look at the problem of a packing of rectangles inside a semi-infinite square width. It's a packing problem, packing algorithm. And in that packing algorithm, I don't have time to explain to you, but if somebody is interested, I can explain later. Basically, you know, in the end, that packing problem leads to asking this this following question, that what is the distribution of Mn when these variables are when the discrete time, and this has and they were looking, they are particularly interested in the case when this fx has a uniform distribution from minus l to plus l with density 1/2l. So it's a normalized distribution, so the width sigma square is just l square over 3. Okay, so in that case, so what is the expected maximum? So what they found is that the expected maximum in the large n limit, there's a leading term which goes like square root of n, as you would expect, because large n limit, it should go, you know, it should go to the continuous time result. So therefore, leading term is very easy to compute. It's just, you know, the sigma is L over root 3, and this is exactly this continuous time result, which was 4 dt over pi. And when you go from discrete to continuous time, you just replace 2 dt, which is the displacement, by n times sigma square. So therefore, this is just sigma square root of 2n over pi, and sigma is L over root 3. So therefore, this is very easy to get. But what they found is that there is a correction term to the leading n behavior. Okay, so this correction, so dimensionally it's of the length. So there is this L, which is the typical jump length, and there is a dimensionless constant C sitting in front, and plus then order 1 over root n constant correction. So the question was, dimensionless constant, they found to have this non-trivial value.
Okay. Do you have any feeling for like why the sign is negative?
I'll come to that. Okay. So that's an interesting point. Okay, so I'll come to that. Okay.
Is that just a numerical result or did it actually?
Yeah, I'll just say it. Well, it's a sort of semi-numerical result, because what happened is that they had, so for this uniform noise distribution, they actually calculated this constant in, and it's a horrible expression in some double C's. Don't even try to read it, basically. And they themselves, you know, say that, you know, this is a very awkward double series, which is a very, very slowly converging. And so which they can then put it in the, you know, Mathematica or something and then find out this constant. Okay. So the main question that we are interested is there a sort of simple and general formula for this constant C? General means that it's, I mean, because this result is valid only for the uniform distribution, but you can say, okay, I mean, what about other distributions? So can we find a formula which is valid for a more general noise distribution of f of x? Okay. So I'll tell you the result, and then I'll later show you how to prove that. So here is our result. So of course, leading term, as I said, you know, it's just sigma square root of 2n pi. So this, generically, there is a constant term here. Here I don't write it as dimensionally, I mean, it has the dimension of length, basically. And this constant has a very simple formula, which is minus 1 over pi dk over k square log of 1 minus f hat k, which is the Fourier transform of this function fx, and here divided by sigma square k square over 2. Sigma square is the width of this function f of x. Okay. In particular, for the uniform distribution, where, you know, this, if you take this uniform distribution f of x and you just calculate its Fourier transform, it's just sine kl over kl, and sigma square is l square over 3. So you find that this constant is c times l, and this c has a sort of nicer looking formula, and you can calculate to any decimal places. Okay, now before I go into prove this, I want to just show you an amusing consequence which will come to this Seed's question. That is, the amusing consequence is that, okay, so here again I'm looking at the same problem. So as I said that the correction term is a constant, sigma times, I mean, here I just write so that it's gamma is a dimensionless constant, I just express in terms of sigma, the same constant. So gamma has this expression, and you can prove that this gamma is always positive. That means the constant term is always negative. You can analytically prove it. Okay. Now the consequence of this is quite interesting, because instead of asking for the maximum, You can also ask, okay, after n steps, the particle is at xn. So let me look at the absolute value of the end point of the particle. Okay, so I just look at up to n steps and I look at what is this, what is the expected value of the modulus of xn. Okay, now you can quite easily show that the leading term again is the same as the maximum expectation value, that is sigma square root of 2n over pi. However, in the correction term, there is no constant here. This is much easier to compute compared to this extreme value problem. This is just, you know, just you can just calculate it by Laplace transform or Fourier transform. And you can show easily that there is no constant term. The next correction term is actually order 1 over root n. Okay. So, if you subtract these two objects and take the large n limit and divide by sigma, just the scale, so it says that even in thermodynamic limit, the difference between these two objects is a negative number, which is slightly counterintuitive because this is the expected maximum and this is the end point. But the point is that, you know, this is the expected positive maximum. So what it says is that most of the configurations, you will find that this end point actually, you know, lies more to the negative side, so that when you take the modulus, it's actually bigger than the expected value of Mn, which is not at all a sort of easy result to understand, but it just comes out to be. Okay. It just happens. Okay, just one more application and then I'll come to second problem. So, one nice application of this is that if you just take...
Can I ask a question? Regarding the how do you pass from the discrete to the continuous?
Yeah.
Not only a question of n approaching infinity, you have also the jump length that l has to go to zero. So how these n and l parameters are related in order to...
So that's exactly what I'm saying. You know, if you take your... this sigma square, which is actually proportional to L square, right? Mm-hmm. If you make n steps, okay, then it's sigma square n is the position of the particle after n steps.
Each step has a size L.
Of course,
right?
Of course. So, I mean, you have to take the n going to infinity limit, L going to zero limit, keeping n L, in keeping into delta t n to L square fixed, and that's the diffusion constant. Mm-hmm. And that's how you go from the discrete to continuum case.
Okay. Now, I'm trying to understand the correction, because in that case, the correction goes to zero, no?
So yeah, but correction term here also is proportional to L, right? Proportional to L. So when you take the L going to zero limit, it goes to zero.
Uh-huh.
It's a dimension full constant. Okay. So here is the Rouse chain in thermal equilibrium. Rouse chain just says that it's a polymer chain. So it's rooted at the origin here. And these beads of the polymer are connected by springs. Okay. And so you have N step chain. Okay. So if you look at the, you know, and suppose that this polymer chain is in thermal equilibrium with a heat bath or something, and so the probability distribution of a configuration in equilibrium, in thermal equilibrium, is just given by e to the power minus beta, where beta is the inverse temperature, and there is some kappa is some spring constant, times the, this is the harmonic interaction, so this is just the square of the difference between the two bead positions. Okay. So you can think of this equilibrium configuration of the polymer chain in space. You can think that this is like, you know, for example, if I look at the x coordinate of these beads, then xm is actually like xm minus 1 plus xi m, where this xi m is chosen from a Gaussian distribution, because if you just put xi m equal to xm minus 1, you recover. So it's like a product of the noise terms in the equilibrium, basically. Okay. So this is exactly a discrete time problem. Now time is just this index m, basically, which is going along the polymer chain, and where the noise is drawn from a Gaussian distribution. And again, you can ask, what's the maximum mn to the positive side? Okay, I look at the maximum span of this walk on the positive side, mn, here. And so, as I said, you know, from our formula, you can actually calculate the leading term is this, and there is this non-trivial constant sitting there. And so, in this case, you can actually put this in the formula Gaussian. The Fourier transform is just again e to the power minus q square. You can do this integral, and it turns out to be, you know, some number here. And so you can calculate then the end point. End point, of course, is very simple to calculate from this. And end point again turns, you know, it's just there is no constant correction to it. And therefore, if you take the difference again, that is, if I take the modulus of xn and if I take mn, then the difference in the thermodynamic limit goes into this non-trivial negative constant. So this is sort of one way of seeing this constant in the thermodynamic limit. I mean, even though it appears as a correction to expected maximum, but you can actually see it if you subtract off the endpoint from the expected maximum. It shows up even in the thermodynamic limit.
Excuse me.
Sure.
There is a theory of Adler and Lindegren, in which they express the probability of exceedance of the maximum, which has two contributions, one which depends upon the internal domain, which is proportional to the one that you derive, but there is also another correction which taking account of the boundaries. So I was wondering...
In my case, boundaries are fixed. One is that it starts at the origin,
yeah, exactly,
and the other end is free.
Exactly.
The other end
there
is free.
Also an extra correction term which taking account of the boundary effect.
Yeah,
so
it's
exactly equal to the probability that x at zero is greater than...
Yeah, no, I mean, but I'm interested only in the, you know...
I was wondering how these two theories are related. Can you make a link between your approach and Lindegren or Adler approach based on the exceedance of expected value of crossings and stuff like that?
Okay, I mean, maybe you can discuss this later. I mean, okay. I can't, right now, I can't tell you. So let me now come to the second problem, okay, which is the problem of a flux to a spherical trap. So again, I'll start with a continuous time Brownian motion. So imagine that in three dimension, I mean in three dimension, you have a sphere of radius r, and you have a bunch of random walkers, okay, bunch of particles basically spread out outside this sphere with uniform density rho zero at time t equal to zero. And subsequently, each of them is doing a Brownian motion in three dimension, okay. So they're just moving around like this. And then the sphere is completely absorbing. That means if any of these particles, you know, land on the sphere, it gets immediately absorbed by the sphere, okay. So then you ask, what is the density field outside the sphere? Initially, it was a constant density field rho naught. What's the density field outside the sphere at time t, okay. So this is the old problem, goes back to the time of Smoluchowski. And so how do you solve this problem? So you write down the diffusion equation, del rho del t equal to d del square rho. And so this is this equation satisfied by the density field outside the sphere. And then this has to be solved with the boundary condition, which is absorbing on the sphere. That means the density must go to zero on the surface of the sphere. So that's zero. And for very far away from the surface of the sphere, you would expect that, you know, it doesn't see this sphere, therefore it must stay at its initial value rho naught. So you have to solve this equation with these two boundary conditions. So the solution, of course, is spherically symmetric, because the initial condition is spherically symmetric. So you can write down the del square rho as just in the r, you know, radial direction. So it's just d minus 1 over r here in d dimensions. And in particular, d equal to 3, if you substitute this rho of rt is just a simple substitution, 1 over r f of rt, then it's well known from three-dimensional quantum mechanics books that actually, you know, this will reduce to one-dimensional diffusion equation, okay, for r bigger than r. So a capital F is just little r times rho, okay. So this is the effective one-dimensional diffusion equation. Now I just express in terms of the distance from the surface of the sphere. So I define r as capital R plus little z. So z just denotes the distance from the surface of the sphere. So in terms of this f variable, the initial condition now becomes, because of this transformation here, that this initial density rho naught times this r plus z. So it's like a one-dimensional diffusion equation, but with a ramp initial condition where the density is actually increasing with distance. Okay. And you have to solve this with the boundary condition that at z equal to 0, that means on the surface of the sphere, I have absorption, that is probability should go to 0. And very large distance from the surface of the sphere, it should go to this initial condition, that namely rho naught times r plus z. Okay. So what is the solution of this? So the solution of this problem can be easily found. So there is one solution, of course, which is the solution of the stationary solution of this equation. So it's just linear, basically. And the other is you can solve the one-dimensional problem that we have already solved before, namely that with a constant thing. And you can check that this is, in fact, the full solution, where this is, again, the error function. Okay. So this is the full solution which satisfies this equation with the required initial and boundary conditions. And therefore, in terms of, now if I go back to my original variable, the density field outside the sphere at time t is just rho naught over r minus r. This is a complementary error function. r minus r, so I should write down here. So, but one interesting thing that you notice is that when you take the large time limit, t goes to infinity limit, it actually becomes, it has a time independent form. It goes into a stationary solution, stationary density profile outside the surface of the sphere. So it goes to rho 0 times 1 minus capital R over R. So it has a profile which looks like this. So this is the surface of the sphere, and outside it sort of slowly approaches as a power law to its final density rho naught. Okay, so this is a stationary profile. So I should tell you why we look at the second problem actually, because after our, you know, paper with this non-trivial constant on expected maximum was published, I got this email from Bob Ziff, who said that, oh, you have found an expression of my constant. And then he gave us the reference of his paper, which was in 1991. And we went and looked at that paper, which didn't look anything like, you know, the expected maximum, but yet this non-trivial constant with up to 6 decimal places was the same. So that actually sort of, you know, started, that's why we started looking at the problem. So what Bob Ziff did is to look at the discrete time version of this spherical 3D problem. So let me just now say, so it goes into a stationary density profile, this continuous time Brownian motion. Now let's look at the same problem. Again, I distribute the particles with uniform density rho naught outside the sphere. One other thing I want to calculate again for the continuous time thing is that, so we have a stationary solution outside the density, outside the sphere at very large time, and at any given time, this is the exact solution. Now, if you look at the instantaneous flux, that means you ask how many particles, you know, get absorbed into the sphere in a small time between t and t plus dt. So this is just the area of the surface area of the sphere times the current which is flowing into the sphere. So it's just the gradient of rho at evaluated at r equal to r. And you can use this expression for rho of rt to calculate this. It's just a simple formula like this. And you can also ask what is the integrated flux, the total flux up to time t, which is just the integrated up to time t of this object. So this has, you know, this expression. Now, alternately, you could calculate the total flux by saying that, you know, this total number of particles that got absorbed here is just the missing mass. Now, missing mass means that initially I had a density rho naught. Currently, I have a density rho of RT. So, therefore, the difference in density times the, you know, total volume of the system outside. So, that must have been the number of particles that have gone into the sphere. Okay. So, therefore, you can calculate the same formula by plugging in this value here. Okay. And the net result is that the integrated flux actually has this expression where, you know, there's this radius r appears both inside, and so there's this leading linear behavior and there's a subleading square root of t behavior, and with the radius appearing here. Okay. So for this continuous time problem, I've discussed two objects, two physical quantities. One is the stationary density profile outside the sphere in the long time limit, and other is the integrated flux up to time t. Okay, so now let's look at the problem when these are not continuous time Brownian motion, but they are discrete time jumpers, if you like. So each guy, now again, initially they are distributed with initial density rho naught outside the sphere. And now each particle from a given position at each time step, it jumps by a distance L, which is chosen isotropically. Okay, so this is the jump probability, if you like. So this is like a Rayleigh flights. So it goes from r prime to r according to this delta function thing. That means its magnitude is L, but it chooses uniformly, you know, isotropically from any of the directions, and it just jumps there. Okay, this 4 pi is just to normalize this. Okay. And if the end point of the jump, it falls inside the sphere, then it gets absorbed in the sphere. Okay. So that's the problem. And the question is that Bob Ziff asked in 91 is that what is the, you know, the density profile after n steps. Okay. And what he found numerically is that in the long time limit, n is discrete now, so when n goes to infinity, again, it goes into a stationary distribution, stationary profile outside the sphere. But it's very different from the continuous time problem. Remember, in the continuous time problem, we had this expression here, rho naught into 1 minus, very simple expression. It goes, approaches the asymptotic density rho naught as a slow power law. What happens now is that when you are very far out from the sphere, okay, so you hardly see the sphere basically. So there, it has the expression for the discrete time case is more or less similar to the continuous time case, except that this r, effective radius, shrinks by a small amount, which is proportional to the length of the jump, L, times this non-trivial constant C prime, which he found numerically to be about 0.29. So it's the same, 2979. Whereas when you approach the radius of the sphere, of course beyond the, inside the radius of the sphere, density must be zero. So when you approach to the radius of the sphere, it actually goes to a constant. It does not go to zero anymore. Okay, so it goes to a constant, where again there is some non-trivial constant here, and you have this expression. Okay. So the density profile looks like that very far away from the sphere, it goes asymptotically into this form. Okay, and this is blue curve is the actual density, and then it goes to a constant at the surface of the sphere, and then just goes to zero inside this sphere. Okay, but if you take this asymptotic solution, for example, and if you sort of, you know, extrapolate just this exactly asymptotic form all the way up to zero, so it's like as if the radius of the sphere has shrunk by a distance C prime times L. And this in other contexts, I mean, this is known as what is called the Milne extrapolation length. So this is the extrapolation length. As if you extrapolated the asymptotic solution, then as if the sphere has shrunk by this small distance. Okay. And this Milne extrapolation length, this is what Bob Ziff found numerically, was this constant. Okay.
So what happens if r is smaller than C prime L?
Yeah, so I mean here it's what is assumed is r is bigger than 2L basically. Okay, so there's grazing trajectories are not taken into account basically. And the second thing you can ask, what about the flux? So if you look at the, again, you know, remember the continuous time, the flux had this expression, there's a linear term, there's a square root T term with radius here. Now in the discrete time case, what happens is that the flux also gets modified, and all that happens is just this R gets replaced by R minus C prime L, and the D gets replaced by D prime, which is the sort of discrete equivalent, L square over 6 times delta N basically, but this is N. So rest of the things exactly identical, except so all the effect of discreteness of the steps is just to reduce this radius by this Milne extrapolation length. Okay, so that is the sort of picture that that as far as the flux is concerned, it's as if the radius has shrunk by this little amount, you know, C prime L. It's like a boundary layer basically, and where the C prime has this constant. Okay, so. So let me, before I get into any technical details, let me just summarize so that you know roughly what I'm talking about. So I talked about the first problem, which is the just a one-dimensional discrete time random walk problem, okay, where it jumps with arbitrary distribution f of x, which is continuous and symmetric. And in that case, the expected maximum leading term is this, and there's an, you know, next correction to the leading term is a constant, and for the uniform jump distribution, this constant is, you know, which has the exact value. Whereas in problem 2, which is a three-dimensional problem, you are looking at a very different object. You are looking at, you know, the density profile. So these are Rayleigh flights, so isotropic jump. And you are looking at the density profile in the stationary density profile, which has in its expression in the asymptotically large regime, has these expressions, you know, it appears to be the same constant C prime as this, as C. And plus it goes to a non-trivial constant on the surface of the sphere, okay, up to some this factor. And an integrated flux also has the same constant C prime L. And so the question was that is this constant C prime in the three-dimensional problem is the same as the constant C as in the, that appears in the expected maximum? And can one calculate a formula for this C equal to C prime? And plus for the 3D problem, this is a numerical result, so can one calculate analytically the density profile in the large N limit? And can one calculate this flux? This is also a numerical result, so can one prove this result? So the answer to all this is yes, and as I said before, that the what I'm going to show you now is that indeed these two constants are exactly identical, and you can prove that. And this is the expression of this constant for the uniform case, and in general we have a general expression. And in fact, this stationary density profile also you can compute exactly. So for example, you can show that this constant that appears here is just 1 over square root of 6. And you can actually calculate this full flux up to step n. Okay. So that's what I'm going to do. So before I get into any technical details, which I'll try to keep it as minimum as possible, but the main point why the two constants are same, even though they are in very different objects, roughly speaking, is basically what happens is that, see, the main reason why the discrete time problem is much harder to solve compared to the continuous counterpart is that for the continuous time case, you can always write down a Fokker-Planck equation, which is a differential equation, whereas for discrete jumps, as you will see immediately, that, you know, you cannot write down a differential equation, you have to write an integral equation. And it so happens that the integral equation that appears in problem 1 and the integral equation that appears in problem 2, I mean after some transformation, are exactly identical. The only difference is in the initial condition. So the effective integral equation for this problem, the initial condition is slightly different from the effective integral equation of this problem. So this integral equation has solutions, which are the general solution, which is a Green's function, plus an initial condition dependent term. And so the two problems share the same Green's function, and that is why, and this constant actually appears in the Green's function, and that's why they have the same constant. Basically, that's roughly the, you know, it's not a very physical understanding, but it's a technical understanding at least. And so let me now just, you know, just last few, 20 minutes. So I'll go into the, to show you how to actually, how we solve these equations. So how does one map it to an integral equation? So let us consider the problem one first, expected maximum. So this is again the same notations as before. So xm is xm minus 1 plus xi m. So at each step it jumps by this jump, which is drawn from the distribution of fx, which has a finite sigma square. Okay. So mn is the maximum of this guy. So this is the mn in this particular configuration. And as I said, that the probability that the mn is less than z, what's the probability that the maximum lies below z, is the same as the probability, this is the same for discrete time Walker as well, what's the probability that starting at z, that this Walker stays positive, stays over zero up to n steps. Okay? So this is the qnz, I'll call it now qnz. Okay? So it's easy to see that this qnz actually satisfies the following integral equation. So qnz, so I ask, what's the probability that starting at z, the particle survives up to step n? So look at what happens in the first step. So it's a backward equation. So I just look at what happens in the first step. So suppose in first step it goes from z to z prime. Probability for that to happen is f of z minus z prime. That's the jump kernel. Okay. And once it's at z prime, then subsequently it has to, for the rest of the n minus 1 steps, it has to stay positive. So the probability for that is qn minus 1 z prime. And I take the product because it's a Markov process. So therefore, you know, you just have this, this is the integral equation. And the initial condition for that is that initially, if I am n equal to 0, what's the probability that it survives up to 0 steps? So clearly it's 1 because for all z positive. Okay. So this is the basically integral equation. So once you can solve this integral equation, then you can calculate the expected maximum, just because dq and z, this is the cumulative probability. So therefore density is this. And so the expected value is that. And therefore, you know, just do by integration by parts and you get 0 to infinity 1 minus qnz dz. So all you have to do is to solve this integral equation, find out the solution qnz and just perform this integral. Okay, that's the steps. And so these integral equations are very difficult to solve in general. They are called the Wiener-Hof integrals. The main reason is because the integral is from 0 to infinity here. Okay. And it's not minus infinity to plus infinity. If it was from minus infinity to plus infinity, you could just do by Fourier transform. Or if it was from 0 to z, you could take the Laplace transform because it's convolution form. But because it's actually from 0 to infinity, it's actually, these are well known to be very difficult problems, which are Wiener-Hof integral equations basically. Okay. So you can just do one more step, namely define the generating function, qnz s to the power n. So this generating function satisfies exactly similar equation. It just gets a factor of s here because of n minus 1. And the source term, Q0z, is just 1 basically. Okay. So this is the inhomogeneous Wiener-Hof integral equation with a source term, which is exactly 1 in this problem. So all you have to do is to basically somehow solve this equation and then plug it in here to calculate the expected maximum. What about the problem 2? So for the problem 2, so now we have, we have a jump kernel, which is that it's isotropic jump. It's a delta function in R. So the magnitude is fixed L, and the direction is completely uniform. Initially, I am with density rho naught, constant density outside. So let's say rho n r is the density field at time n, time step n, outside this sphere. So then, again, you can write an integral equation for this. So the density at r prime will be the density at r at step n will be at the density at r prime times this jump probability clearly. And this r prime has to be bigger than or equal to r because it has to come from somewhere, because if it couldn't have come from inside this sphere, so it has to come from outside this sphere. So we have this r prime bigger than or equal to r. And because of the spherical symmetry of the problem, okay, so let me go like this. So this rho n, so this rho n r actually, it's a bit crowded, this transparency, that's why I didn't want to show you. So, so this rho n r actually depends only on the radius, radial distance r. So therefore, you know, you can just write down this as, in terms of radial, it's very simple, it's just an elementary thing. And this w, I'm talking about right now a general w, and ultimately we'll put this delta function. So general kernel. So inside the kernel, it's r minus r prime, which is just r square minus r prime square minus 2 r prime cosine theta. And because we are in three dimension, so there is a sine theta d theta appears here, and you can actually do the angular integration easily, and you basically come across to this kernel. Okay. And now, like as you did in the continuum case, continuous time case, you just define another, make it just a change of variable, 1 over r times fn of r, and then you see that fn of r actually satisfies this integral equation, which is looking like a one-dimensional integral equation, and the kernel, effective kernel, is, which is just this object here. Okay. Now, if you take an isotropic distribution in the three-dimensional space, you can show by doing this integral that this effective kernel in one dimension is actually just a uniform distribution. Okay. Except that the initial condition, of course, because of this transformation here, because initially my density was rho 0, so therefore F0R is just proportional, it's like a linear density, it's proportional to R. And again, I make a shift, I just go measure distance from the surface of the sphere, I call it Z. So in terms of Z, I just express, you know, this function as Qn of Z. So the finally, you know, these are just, you know, a little bit of detail, so don't bother too much about it. So in terms of, so basically the main point is that the density, you can write it as, you know, rho naught over r times qn r minus r. It's just r minus r is just this distance, where this qnz now satisfies this integral equation. And, but the initial condition is quite different from the one-dimensional case. It's actually q naught z, which is z plus r. So it's like a ramp initial condition, if you like. Like initially the particles are in this effective one-dimensional problem, the particles are distributed and the density is actually increasing linearly with distance from the surface of the sphere. Okay. So all we see is that, you know, it's, so therefore you can take the generating function and write down again an inhomogeneous Wiener-Hof equation. So it's exactly identical to the one-dimensional case, this part, except that the source term is different. Source term is now z plus r. In the one-dimensional case, it was just 1. So let me just summarize the two problems on the same footing. So in the problem 1, we had this cumulative distribution satisfies this integral equation where Fz is a uniform distribution, for example. And the source term was exactly 1. Whereas here, so I missed a factor S in these two places. Whereas in this three-dimensional problem, which I reduce effectively to a one-dimensional problem in the radial direction. So then, the only difference is that this kernel is exactly same as this kernel, except that the source term is different. Okay. So the general problem is therefore to solve an integral equation of this form, psi of ZS is S times this kernel here and plus a source term, and just problem 1 just corresponds to source term equal to 1 and problem 2 corresponds to source term equal to R plus Z. Okay. So these are called half space problems or Wiener half problems, and they are, you know, in general very, as I said, very hard problem to solve, and they appear in many different places, including in astrophysics and astronomy, where, you know, people look at the radiative transfer of photon scattering, and plus the probabilists also have looked at this problem, Polozek in way back in 1952, then Spitzer and other people, and so in general for arbitrary kernel f of z, these are very hard to solve, these problems. However, in the case when fz has an interpretation of a probability density and it is symmetric and continuous, so in that case actually you can obtain a closed form solution, at least there is a principle of obtaining the closed form solution. Now usually this is done in the very complicated complex plane, these things, but there is a beautiful recent paper by Ivanov which actually solves this problem, at least, you know, it tells you what to do to find the solution. And I'll just summarize, you know, don't bother about the steps, but I'll summarize the three main steps of this solution. So here is the problem. So we want to solve this integral equation of the source term. So there are three steps to the solution. The first step is to find the Green's function, where we replace the source term by a delta function term at some source at z1. Okay. So g is the, you know, Green's function, which satisfies the same equation but with a delta function term here. Okay. So if you know the Green's function, then of course it's a linear equation, so therefore psi of z is just g of z z1 this integral basically. Okay. So all you have to do is to find the Green's function. Okay. So the Green's function is just, you know, if you now define the double Laplace transform of this Green's function with respect to the two coordinates, lambda and lambda prime, you have this object, and you can obtain a closed form expression for this in the case when this f of z has the interpretation of a probability density, and you can show that, you know, you can write down this as product of, you know, some two functions, phi of lambda 1 divided by lambda plus lambda 1, where phi of lambda 1 is related to the surface Green's function, z of z0. So these are, I mean, a bit complicated, but, you know, I'm just telling you the main steps essentially, okay. And I recommend, you know, those of you who will come, many people come across this problem, and I recommend this paper highly. It's a very beautiful paper actually. So, and finally, you can obtain this phi of lambda. There's an exact expression for phi of lambda in terms of this f hat k, and it's just given by this, where f hat k is the Fourier transform of this function. So essentially, the main point is that there are these three steps. So in principle, if you have any arbitrary kernel f of z, so first evaluate phi of lambda, then put phi of lambda back here and invert this double Laplace transform to get the Green's function, and then put and do this integral to finally get your solution. So that, you know, that is a sort of a technically very difficult part. I mean, this is, in principle it's doable, but in practice for arbitrary f of z, it's very arbitrary source term, it's very hard to do. These two steps, inversion of the Laplace transform and the carrying out this integral, is often very difficult. But fortunately for this problem, we can do it. So I won't go through the details, I'll just tell you the main results. So for the 1D problem, where your source term was 1, so the Laplace transform has the precisely exact solution, which is of this form. Okay, and from that, you can actually extract the large n asymptotics of the maximum. Okay, it requires a lot of, you know, not a lot, but, you know, it's a delicate exercise to extract the leading asymptotic behavior, but in principle it's doable. And so here is what is our result. We find that this constant is just given by this exact expression. Okay. And as I said, in particular for the uniform density, you can compute, is just f of k is just sine kl by kl, and it's given by this integral, which is this constant. Now, one interesting thing here I want to point out is that, so you have this exact solution. In particular, you can evaluate at z equal to 0. You just have to extract as n goes to infinity, So you can actually extract the qn0, that is, what's the probability that the particle starting at the origin stays above the origin up to n steps. So it's very simple from this expression, you can work it out. It just turns out to be 1 over square root of 1 minus s, which is completely independent of the distribution, noise distribution f of x. Okay. So this is, and you can just calculate it exactly. It turns out to be this number, and this is what is called the, you know, this fact that it's actually universal for all n, not just for large n. For all n, the probability that the particle starting at the origin, which is very important, stays above the origin up to n steps. This is actually a universal function for all n, and this is what is called the Spahr-Anderson theorem. And in particular, in the large n limit, it goes to 1 over square root of pi n. So if you multiply it by square root of n and then take the limit n going to infinity limit, it becomes a universal number, 1 over square root of pi. Okay, so for the second problem, again you can do the calculation exactly. It turns out that with this particular source term, and in particular the stationary density profile, you can calculate if you call this Q, rho naught over r times q of the distance from the surface, then this q of z, you know, its Laplace transform has an exact expression for arbitrary jump distribution. And you can, for example, you can show that this has this blue curve is the exact analytical function, and it has this asymptotic behavior as found numerically by Zipf before, and where this constant A is precisely given by that, and the prefactor here is just precisely sigma over root 2. So in particular, if you take the isotropic Rayleigh fights, where sigma is L over root 3 and this constant A is given by this, this is just a number. So the constant, the density on the surface of the sphere goes to a constant, it doesn't go to 0, and this constant is just 1 over root 6. This was, the numerical result was 0.408 basically. So you can ask, is there an analog of Spahr-Anderson theorem for this 3D problem? So as I said, in the problem 1, you can look at the, you know, solution of your integral equation qn0, which is the probability that the particle starting at the origin stays above the origin up to n steps. In the large n limit, it goes into a universal constant 1 over root pi. Okay. Actually, it is universal for all n, but, you know, in particular for the large n limit. Now, in problem 2, again, you can ask the same thing. So, you have the density profile, and you can ask this capital Qn, which is defined outside the sphere. So, what happens Qn0? So, this Qn0 and this capital Qn0, they satisfy the same integral equation, but with different source term. Is there anything universal here? It turns out, yes. If you look at this, so, if you look at the density of the surface of the sphere, Qn at 0, and divide by the scale, which is the non-universal part, if you divide by the sigma of the width of the noise distribution, again it goes to a universal constant, which is 1 over root 2. So this is the sort of analog of Spahr-Anderson theorem for this problem. So in other words, this is a sort of nice result, which is that the density profile actually on the surface of the sphere, if you construct this dimensionless variable, so I look at the stationary profile on the stationary density on the surface of the sphere, I divide by the initial density, so it's a dimensionless number, radius of r, the sphere, divided by the sigma, which is also a length variable. So this object is a dimensionless variable, and this is universal, 1 over root 2, for any noise distribution, okay, as long as it's continuous and symmetric. Just to mention that you can actually calculate the full integrated flux also by the same procedure, that is, you know, just calculate the missing mass. Since you know the density profile exactly, so you can actually calculate the full thing, and it again confirms to the numerical results that Zipf had found. Okay, so let me just summarize and conclude. Okay. So as I said, I spoke about two different problems. One is the random walk in one dimension, where the observable of interest is the expected maximum of the random walker. And it has its, asymptotically for large n, it has a square root of n behavior, but there is a non-trivial correction to scaling leading behavior, and this constant correction you can compute exactly. And a similar problem is in three-dimensional Rayleigh flights, and there the stationary density profile and the flux, they have, you know, the interesting profile, the stationary density has an interesting stationary profile. It doesn't go to zero at the surface of the sphere, but goes to a constant, which you can calculate, and the large R asymptotic solution has this non-trivial constant A there, which is precisely the same constant as in the one-dimensional expected maximum. And at least at the technical level, I hope I've been able to explain that, you know, that this is why this same constant appears. So the main lesson is that the discreteness actually induces pretty significant effect. Okay. I mean, you can see that even in the thermodynamic limit by looking at the, for example, the difference between the maximum and the end point. And there are many open problems. I mean, for example, you know, can you solve this flux problem in D not equal to 1 and 3? Because in three-dimensional played a very crucial role here, because I could reduce it to one-dimensional integral equation because it was three-dimensional. But, you know, in general, that is not true. You cannot reduce to effective one-dimensional equation. And then, but you expect that there will be a non-trivial constant there for any dimension. And so can one calculate that? So that's an open question. Okay, so thank you for your attention.
So how do you prove the Spahr-Anderson theorem?
I just showed you the proof.
So you go through all those steps and even off paper?
Yes, it's not an easy proof. I mean.
So it's not really a proof, it's just a calculation.
No, you just calculate Qn of 0. Okay. You calculate and show that it is in universal.
Okay.
There is no simple way about it, okay. Unfortunately.
So a Spahr-Anderson too probabilist?
Spahr-Anderson was even more complicated proof, actually.
And can you get your constant A out of that expression with the binomial coefficients by taking n to infinity?
No, say it again.
So you've got Qn0 is this binomial coefficient 2nn.
Yeah.
Over 2.
No, you cannot get, because Qn0 is very different, right? Because, you know, expected maximum is this integral. Mm-hmm. So you need the full information Qnz for all z. Q0, Qn0 will not tell you anything about it. So.
For the one-dimensional problem, the probability kernel, you were assuming that was symmetric? Or
that was symmetric, yes.
Is it possible to say anything at all,
yes,
when it's not?
Yes, we have done that actually with Tyler Comte, when there's a bias, and you can actually do it, yeah. You can do it, means you can find the full expression, basically.
Is it analogous, or does it change fundamentally? Or?
Well, you know, if you have a positive bias, for example, away from the origin, then the expected maximum will increase linearly with n as opposed to square root of n.
I don't mean a bias, but it might have mean zero, although it's not symmetric.
Yeah, but non-symmetric, effectively, it reduces to the positive bias, right? Because, you know, you can show that this will be just fx. When fx is non-symmetric, okay? Because this is a random walk problem, right? So fx...
Oh, but it can still have zero drift, although it's not symmetric.
You have to have parabola anywhere other than zero.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay. So, the only thing we can calculate is when there's a constant positive drift, basically. Okay.
Okay, so symmetry plays an essential role in everything here. In the sense that you have a kernel that's essentially symmetric, except for maybe...
Yeah, I mean, you have to sort of reduce it to somehow symmetric, basically. Absolutely. Yes.
Is the Ivanov method applicable to any integral equation of the
Wiener-Hopf? Yes, I mean, the only constraint, as I said, that the kernel has to have some interpretation of probability density. That means it should be positive, it should be continuous, and it should be symmetric. So as long as you have that, then you can apply these results. Yeah.
Can't you take advantage of the independence of the noise term? I mean, you pointed out that the position variable has correlations.
Yes.
But the noise term... Does
yes,
not.
Has not, yes.
And you can...
It's not that easy. I mean, in the end, effectively, you are doing that. But, you know, it's not that easy. Somehow, the correlation that it induces in the actual X variable is because you're looking at the sum of different random numbers, right?
That's right. You're looking at the probability of the sum.
That's right, exactly. So that is, you know, that's... It's not... I mean, but you're looking at the maximum of the sum, basically.
Right, that's right.
So that actually is sort of rather non-trivial. It's not, I don't think it's sort of easy, that easy to do it just by looking at the noise variables.
The fact that this correction is negative, can we say that over, 1,000 of realization, 1 million of realization of your process, the maximum will occur more on the at the endpoints rather than within the domain. So how can we come up with a physical justification of? So you show at the beginning that the expected maximum it is less than
the expected. But I said expected maximum is less than expected modulus of the endpoint.
Yeah, I say from a frequency interpretation, from a physical point of view, can we say that the maximum will occur more at the endpoint instead of
I don't know. It's not that trivial. At least
I mean,
this result actually looks rather somehow non-trivial to me. I mean, I haven't been able to figure out, you know, a simple physical reason for this result.
What was your first thought?
First thought means basically that, you know, in some sense, because you are looking at the positive maximum, okay? So the configurations that contribute to the maximum, okay, they are typically those configurations whose endpoint occur more to the negative axis.
I'm sorry, the problem is stated as for positive maximum only.
Yes.
Absolutely. No, I insisted on that. Yeah, I insisted on that. Absolutely. Yes. No, otherwise, of course, you know, otherwise it's not true. I mean, clearly, I mean.
No, because this one, like, for every realization, on the positive side, xnk go up to maximum.
But on the
negative side, it can go to...
That's right. So, effectively, it induces a bias to the particle. Effectively, it does that. I mean, once you state that there is a maximum, it's like, you know, you can't go, there's a barrier, basically. So, effectively, it sort of goes down to the negative side. Yeah.
I mean, at this point, can you tell me more about the shape of the process locally to a maximum at this point?
No, say it again.
I understand your point.
Yeah.
It is in perfect agreement with the theory of Lindgren, with the shape of the process locally to a maximum. So now it's
okay, I don't know this. Maybe you can discuss that later.
Can we say that the shape of the maximum is closer to the autocovariance function of your process? What is the shape
of the maximum? What is the shape of the maximum?
This is what he says. That's the shape.
How do you define? I don't know. I don't know how do you define shape of the maximum.
How does it look? The covariance function, the autocovariance function of your process in this case.
Autocorrelation. This is just a random walk, right? I mean.
Yeah, random walk.
So it's just a minimum of. I mean, if you like, you know, xn prime. Is just minimum of nn prime. It's just a plain, simple, ordinary random walk. Okay. So
it will be interesting to see what is the shape.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know this paper, so I mean, so.
Okay, I think on this happy note, we should break for lunch. Let me just remind you that that the next set of talks starts at 2:00. And why don't we thank both of our speakers this morning for very interesting talks.